On 81, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. About every 5 years, the government issues recommendations about what we should eat based on the latest research. Last month, a group of 14 food, nutrition, and medical experts on the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee sent a report to the Department of Health and Human Services and the Agriculture Department with advice that may find its way into the final guidelines that the government will issue later this year. Whatever those guidelines end up being, it seems likely that a lot of us will pay them little heed. Almost half of Americans, about 117 million of us, have chronic diseases which are preventable. And even more of us, about 155 million American adults, are overweight or obese. So let's talk about what the advisory committee found and some of the reactions to their report with our very own resident expert, the nutrition diva Monica Reinagle. She's a licensed nutritionist who blogs at Nutrition Over Easy and whose weekly podcasts appear on Quick and Dirty Tips. com. Welcome back. Good to see you, Monica.
Hi, Tom.
So we should say, first of all, this is not the final report. This is experts sort of weighing in, and there's even a period for public comment, et cetera. So this is not the be-all and end-all yet.
No, but it's a pretty good forecast of what the dietary guidelines will look like when they come out later this year. But right now, we are in the period of public comment, and even more importantly, perhaps industry comment.
Yeah, and there's lots of reactions, positive and negative, to this. In a way, the report doesn't have a whole lot of new news. These are recommendations that we've heard before. Eat more fruits and vegetables. Don't eat as much. Don't eat so much sugar, saturated fat. Any big surprises?
Exactly. Yeah, the changes from every 5 years tend to be pretty incremental, but there was actually one big change this year, and that was that they are now saying that cholesterol in food isn't something that we need to worry about anymore, which reverses 40 years of dietary dogma. And that certainly got some big attention from the nutrition industry, from nutrition professionals like me. I think the big reaction really was, what took you so long? But, this is a big change. But I want to emphasize, they're not saying that your cholesterol isn't something that you need to worry about, the cholesterol in your blood. They're just saying that the cholesterol that we get from food, so that would be foods like eggs and shrimp, doesn't seem to have a big impact on your cholesterol. Mm-hmm. So continue to worry about your cholesterol, but don't worry so much about the cholesterol in foods.
And what these 14 people on this panel were doing were sort of surveying all of the research that's been generated over these last 5 years. So I guess there's new research that says the relationship between food, cholesterol in food, and cholesterol in people's bodies is not as strong as they thought. I mean, how'd they all of a sudden decide there wasn't a connection?
Right. There is research. There's quite a bit of research now saying that the amount of cholesterol we eat from our food doesn't really impact our blood cholesterol one way or the other, but I wouldn't characterize it as new research. This research has been around for a long time. It's been accumulating, which is why I said most of us are wondering, what took you so long? But mm-hmm. better late than never. Mm-hmm.
And the importance of these things, I mean, even though the guidelines tend to be very similar from year to year, you know, every 5 years, the impact of these things is significant because it helps to animate policies in a lot of different areas.
That's right. Some people wonder why we put so much attention on the effort into creating these guidelines, because nobody seems to pay any attention. They come out every 5 years and tell us the same things because we're still not doing them. But they do have an impact because these guidelines then flow through to other programs. Like you mentioned, policy initiatives like the SNAP program or the school lunch program. Those then all have to line up around these guidelines. So they do actually have an impact on what Americans are eating every day. But they don't seem to have a huge impact on the choices people make when they're putting foods in their own grocery carts or ordering off the menu of restaurants.
Monica Reinagle is the nutrition diva on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So one of the items in the report concerned red meat and the consumption thereof. And they say essentially that there is moderate to strong evidence that higher intake of red and processed meats is detrimental compared to lower intake. So that's a sort of fancy way of saying we're eating too much of this stuff. But this is not quite so cut and dry. I mean, it's certainly no new news that, oh, you know, red meat is bad for you. There's plenty of people who have been saying that for a long time. But it's not quite as apparent as it may seem, is it?
Well, the evidence, such as it is pretty strong, you know, that we can see a very clear and consistent correlation between the consumption of red meat and an increase in things like certain kinds of cancer and heart disease and even reduced mortality. The problem is that red meat is a problematic category. It is so broad, you know, it includes so many different things that when you are analyzing dietary patterns and lumping everything from a fast food burger to a grass-fed bison steak into one big category, I feel like it makes it a little harder to read those results, but read them they do. And they conclude that we should be eating red meat.
We should be eating less red meat.
I'm sorry. Yes, yeah. We should be eating less red meat.
I was interested to read on your blog that even the notion of what is red meat is up for grabs. I mean, I used to think I knew this is red meat, this is white meat, you know.
It's kind of arbitrary, and it depends on where you come from. So here in the United States, we tend to think of animals that have four legs as red meat and animals that have two legs as white meat. But then there are pigs, which nobody can really figure out what to do with that. Are they red meat or white meat?
Yeah, the pork industry had an advertising campaign for many years, you know, pork, the other white meat.
Right.
Not everybody agrees that it is, in fact, white meat.
That's right. Yeah. In most of these dietary surveys that they're basing this evidence, they're counting pork as red meat. They're also counting hot dogs and pepperoni. And, you know, you mentioned processed meat, which is kind of a whole category unto itself. And we know that there's some problems with high consumption of that. When you just kind of lump that in with the rest of red meat, it gets even blurrier. But I think, you know, we tend to be very black and white about foods. Foods are either good, in which case you should eat as much as you possible, or they're bad and you should never eat them. And I think red meat offers something in between. It is a nutritious food. It contains protein, contains iron, which is one of the nutrients that the experts were pointing out we're not always getting enough of, especially women and teenagers. But there's a difference between having one or two servings a week and having one or two servings a day.
And as we finish up real quick, the way you prepare red meat also has an impact on whether it's good or less good for you.
Yeah, this cuts to the bone for me because I really like my red meat grilled, and that's not the healthiest way to prepare it. The healthiest way is a slower and moist heat method. So anything you put in the crock pot is great. And the bonus there is it allows you to cook cheaper cuts of meat and make them real tender.
Mm-hmm. But it's rare that you would invite people over for a barbecue in which you cook the stuff in a crock pot.
This is why
what happens when you grill it? Why does it make it difficult?
Well, the dry heat and the high heat combine to form harmful compounds in the meat, carcinogens and compounds that elevate inflammation. And these are directly linked to those disease risks. If you must grill, at least marinate, because that can kind of cut down on the formation of those compounds.
Mm-hmm. By as much as 90%, you wrote
yep.
that. Interesting. Okay, always fun to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Great to see you, Tom.
Monica Reinagel, she is the nutrition diva. The Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee is holding a series of public hearings about their report. The next one's in Bethesda at the National Institutes of Health. It's tomorrow morning at 8:30. Come to our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning, and we'll give you a link to more information. We'll also have links to Monica's blog, Nutrition Over Easy, and her weekly podcast at quickanddirtytips.com. That's it for us today. Coming up Wednesday, Sheila explores the history of the Indians who were here when the first Maryland settlers arrived more than 380 years ago. And I'll get immersed in the world of Edgar Allan Poe. Till then, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
Maryland Morning is an original production of
Your Public Radio,
WYPR,
in Baltimore.
The show is produced by Matt Purdy
and Jonna McCone.
We have production help from
Estelle Klein
and Catherine Sway.
Nathan Sterner directs and engineers.
I'm Tom Hall.
And I'm Sheila Cast. On this day in history, 1776, the Continental Congress passed an act allowing ships and boats to be armed. It's what allowed privateering to take hold in Fells Point in Baltimore. Heads up, the Privateer Festival in Fells Point is around the corner, April 18th and 19th. We're back Wednesday. Please join us.